Well, welcome to another episode of Breakaway from the Rat Race. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Brian Davis. Brian is a co-founder of Spark Rental, and he manages a real estate investment club, letting investors of all incomes access private equity real estate investment, aiming for a 15 to 30% return. After spending over a decade as an active investor and landlord, Brian now only invests passively in real estate and spends most of the year overseas with his wife and daughter. So I think we're going to hear all about the expat life that Brian is enjoying, living the life for us. Brian, welcome to the show.
Eric, thank you so much for having me. So glad
My
to be here.
My pleasure. So I think we should talk about that, about the goal. Like normally, you know, I forget who the author was. I said to begin with the end in mind. So let's talk about your lifestyle. That basically was brought on to real estate. And then we're going to go from the end in mind all the way back to what do I have to do, Brian, today to get there? So let's talk about your expat life. Let's talk about your lifestyle right now.
Yeah, no, well, and yeah, it is perfect to start at the end rather than the beginning, because that's where we all want to be, right? So my particular journey, we left the US 8.5 years ago. My wife is a school counselor. And she applied with a recruiting firm for international schools so that we could go have a little adventure overseas. We thought that we would move abroad for 2 years and then come back, but we're still overseas. So we spent 4 years in Abu Dhabi and then another 4 years in Brasilia. We just moved to Lima, Peru in last June. So it's a fun life. You know, in some ways, you see the kind of glamorous stuff, like the pictures at Machu Picchu on my wife's Instagram profile and all that stuff. And that is, it's a lot of fun. You know, the downside of that, of course, is that, you know, we have missed a lot of family weddings and funerals and birthdays. And, you know, that is, it's not all what you see on social media, right?
Yeah.
But it is the life that we have chosen intentionally, right? I mean, and that is what lifestyle design and financial independence ultimately is all about. It's about designing your own ideal life for you, whatever that looks like. So we get to spend most of the year overseas, but we also spend 2 months a year in the US with friends and family, because my wife gets off several months a year as an educator.
Yeah.
So we're actually in the US right now, actually. I'm recording this from Lewis, Delaware, where my mother-in-law lives. And then we're getting ready to head back to Peru. So
nice.
Yeah, I mean, we are not financially independent. At least I don't consider ourselves financially independent. But we still ultimately get to live the same lifestyle that we would be living if we were financially independent. And that is the thing that so many people in the FIRE movement, the FIRE community, don't really understand, is that, you know, you scrimp and you save, you know, for years and years trying to replace, you know, your day job income with passive income, or, you know, to cover all of your living expenses with passive income. But here's the thing. Everyone goes back to work after they retire early. I mean, I've interviewed dozens of people who have retired early, you know, on our own podcast. Most of them were real estate investors, but not all of them. Some of them sold businesses or, you know, whatever it is that they did. They all went back to work because you get bored, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you retire at 30 or 35 or 45 or whatever, there's only so long you can sit on the beach sipping pina coladas, right?
Yeah.
So they all go back to work, but the difference is that they go back to work on their own terms, doing work that they are passionate about, right? And maybe it's location independent, and, you know, they certainly set their own hours, although most of the people that I know do end up going back to work full-time or close to it. So the thing that the shortcut in all of this for people who are pursuing financial independence and lifestyle design is that you don't actually need to cover all of your living expenses with passive income. You just need to figure out, what does my ideal work pay? And if it doesn't pay quite enough to cover your target living expenses, then what's that shortfall, right? Is it $5,000 a year? Is it $10,000 a year? $15,000 a year? You know, it's probably not going to be huge, but there may be some shortfall, and that's all you need to cover with passive income. So, maybe you can already cover your ideal living expenses or your target living expenses with your ideal work, right? In which case, quit your job today and go do that, you know, go do your ideal work now. But if there is a little bit of a shortfall, that's your goal for building passive income.
I think that's very interesting, because a lot of people are thinking about, okay, what do I now have to do to quit my job? I have to pay for all these expenses, and then my medical is going to go through the roof, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, that kind of stuff. And then at least if you find like the ideal job that you enjoy doing, then, okay, yeah, I make like half of that. I just need to figure out how to make the other half of my passive income target, and then I'm good. I'm working full time or part time, and I get some benefits maybe, or some, you know, some other things. So I think that's a very good idea. I really like that idea, and I think it is pretty new. I think I don't think I've heard too many people talk about that. And the FIRE movement, I mean, you have to. Some people are just like, it's extreme frugality that I'm against. I mean, I don't want to live like a homeless for the rest of my life. Yeah, I could live like homeless, and I could live blah blah blah, but that's not what I want. That's not the life that I want. So, you know, that doesn't really interest me. And then, I mean, you're right also about people that are retiring. I say, oh, I finally retired. I was lucky, because I knew early on that I had no interest in playing golf every day.
Right.
So, so I said, okay, well, I can't do that. So I'm not going to, and I don't enjoy the beach every day either. So I knew I had to work and figure something out. I mean, this is why I'm doing some YouTube. This is why I have other companies that I grow and manage. I help other business owner and all that kind of stuff. So you have to keep busy. Otherwise, yeah, exactly. Playing golf every day, I don't know. Some people like it, and that's fine, but some people don't. And you mentioned something that was very interesting too, is that you mentioned the lifestyle design. So designing your lifestyle. So tell me more about that. And you have like a methodology, or you have a series of questions that you ask yourself about kind of like, how do I design my lifestyle and how I back out of that?
Yeah, you know, so I mean, I'm not like a lifestyle design coach or anything, so I don't have
You should be. I think that's good. I see you do that.
I mean, it sounds like fun. It sounds like a great gig. Maybe I should consider it. So yeah, I don't have like a 40 question, you know, a questionnaire or like, you know, a quiz that someone should take to design it. But it's just about intentionality, right? I mean, it's about thinking through every aspect of your life, you know, from where do I want to live geographically? And don't assume that that is in your same city or state or country, yeah. Even. I mean, you know, we've lived in a whole bunch of countries over the years, and spent months at a time in others. So, you know, don't assume that it's even one place. I mean, I know people who are true digital nomads who, yeah, you know, they'll spend a month here, a month there, and they'll just move around, and they love it. And they might have a home base that they return to for 6 months out of the year, or, you know, whatever it is. But so don't make any of those assumptions, right? I mean, get very intentional about, you know, where do I want to live? You know, how many hours a week do I want to work? Right. Mm-hmm. What kind of work do I want to do? Do I want to be married? Do I want to be perpetually single? You know, I mean, do I want to have kids? I mean, these are all things, these are all part of that larger equation of your lifestyle. And you want to bring intentionality to all of that. You know, mm-hmm. Do you want to work in person? Some people love working in person. Do you want to work virtually, or do you want a hybrid arrangement? I mean, all of those go into lifestyle design.
So you really have to be like focused internally and reflect on kind of what do I want for me? Be a little bit selfish for like 1 hour, and then really kind of think about what do I want to do, and what's the kind of lifestyle that I really like, that I really see myself living for a long time.
Yeah, and it's not selfish, because if you're not happy, then you're going to make the people around you miserable, right? So, you know,
I love what you're saying. That's amazing. That's true. So I like that. I like the digital intention as well. So this is good. There was a show on TV about, they were talking about digital nomads, right? And digital nomad is great, but they were also talking about the reality of being a digital nomad. And a lot of it is about being alone. Yes, you're with other digital nomads at all these internet cafes and WeWork kind of thing, but it gets old, And so, you know, a lot of them, they were digital nomad for a couple of years, and now they're kind of like moving back to their home base and saying, okay, well, I'm going to do this now. I can have some friends. I'm close to my family and all that kind of stuff. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there are ways of doing that with other people, and there are services and programs out there, and I'm blanking out on the name of the one that I was just looking at recently. So I wish I could give you the name of it, but there are a lot of these services out there nowadays where, you know, it'll be like a 6-month program or a 3-month program in various cities around the world, where you go and you spend however long it is with other digital nomads or people who are just trying to have a little sabbatical or a break or do something different, either by themselves or with their families. So you do have plenty of those kinds of resources nowadays. You can find those. You know, again, you just have to question all those assumptions, right? And go out and find those resources, because they are out there.
Yeah.
You can find them. And, you know, some digital nomads, they travel as a family. You know, it's not necessarily by yourself. It doesn't mean you won't get lonely necessarily, even if you are traveling with a spouse or with kids, or, you know, you still maybe want to see more than just your spouse and kids day to day. But, you know, there are families who do this. And whether that's before their kids reach school age, or whether they're homeschooling their kids, or whether they just do this during summer vacations.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can do all these things, and these are all options on the table.
Yeah. And for us too, like a lot of people you mentioned, so digital nomad is a little bit extreme, because you kind of have to go and you can move and change location on a regular basis. Typically, that's what they do. You're more like going in one location and staying there for a number of years and then changing to another location. And for me, like, we just moved here from to Florida, Fort Lauderdale area, almost 2 years ago from California. And we've been looking for that place, that city that had everything, that was big and small, that had a lot of the amenities and stuff like that, but, you know, but also very small and quaint, that had the perfect weather year round. And even though my wife and I like different weather.
That's a problem right there, right?
Likes cold, I like warm. And then just like, we want a city that has both at the same time. So what we realize now is that, yeah, we can live in a city that, you know, maybe 9 or 6 months out of the year is perfect. And then we go somewhere else for the other 3 to 6 months, another city or a couple of other cities. So that is also perfect for that other season. So we kind of like, that's just the lifestyle, speaking of lifestyle design too, that this is another option too, is like, you know, this is our home base is Florida, is Fort Lauderdale. And then, you know, for 3 months out of the year, when Fort Lauderdale gets super hot and humid, then we can go somewhere else. So,
yeah. And, you know, again, in today's world, you have a lot more resources than you had once upon a time, right? So, you know, you, for example, could rent out your home on Airbnb when you're not there to help subsidize your costs in traveling, maybe even cover your housing costs when traveling. Yeah, I know one woman who's a digital nomad who stays for free. Everywhere she goes, she does house sitting and pet sitting, and stays at nice houses. I mean, upscale houses, $1 million houses in many cases. And, you know, at the cost of taking care of the house, you know, watering the plants, taking care of the dogs or cats or whatever. But she has no housing costs. So, you know, you can do that, or you can go and stay at an Airbnb, or, you know, whatever you want to do, or book through one of those services like we were talking about a minute ago that cater to digital nomads, and they offer everything from the co-working space to the social element, helping you with housing and all that stuff. So you can arrange this any way that you want. You just have to know what you want.
So Brian, now we know what we want. We know the lifestyle we want, and we're going to design it. We're going to spend some time this week, and we're going to design our perfect lifestyle that's going to incorporate our family, kids, wife, whether you have them now or not. And then now the big question is, how do we get there when I'm living paycheck to paycheck, and You know, how do I get things organized? How do I know the goal? How do I plan the path to that?
Sure. So some of this, it's funny, a few minutes ago, you were talking about the FIRE movement and the extreme frugality that a lot of people in the FIRE movement kind of preach. And there are different phases that people typically go through in that FIRE movement. You know, the first one, just being aware of living paycheck to paycheck and how, you know, oh, maybe that's actually a problem, right? Like, you know, if I want to retire ever, then, you know, whether it's early or on time, I need to start saving more of my money, right, and investing it. So those people, when they first discover the FIRE movement, a lot of times they go into that kind of extreme frugality mindset. But I think people need to go through that initially. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to go through their budget with a fine tooth comb, and yeah, you know, redline all the things that are not serving them, right? The things that they're spending money on that aren't actually delivering the happiness that's equivalent to what they're spending. Yeah. So, you know, again, bringing that intentionality, not just to what you want, but also that intentionality of what you're doing now, what you're spending money on. So, and then you get to a point where you start saving more money, you start bringing in some passive income, and you pull back on that frugality, right? And it becomes more about, you know, not having to be aware of every single dollar that you spend. But initially, you do need to go in and be aware of every dollar that you're spending so that you can find the leakage in your budget, right? You can find what's going wrong, what's not serving you in that budget. And you can kind of graduate through these different levels as you get closer to financial independence, where, you know, you stop having to budget carefully, stop having to think about every dollar you're spending. You have automated savings systems in place, automated investing systems in place. You get better at investing, right? You know, as you do more of it, and you start building passive incomes, you start seeing that coming in every month or every quarter. And that adds to that sense of, you know, financial security and comfort that we all want. That's sort of the big picture of, you know, if you're living paycheck to paycheck now, you know, you probably need to go through some short-term pain in order to rein in your budget. And the other side of that, of course, is looking for ways to earn more money while you spend less money. So attacking the problem from both sides, growing that gap between what you earn and what you spend. There will probably be a period of short-term pain as you wrestle back control over your finances. But you can get through that period pretty quickly if you're really aggressive about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, definitely something that's easy to do is look at how you spend your money and then start cutting down. That's easy. Then adding additional income streams, I mean, that's kind of like, it's a little bit more difficult, but it's not impossible, obviously. I know for me, like one of my stories is around cable TV. I was noticing that nobody was really watching cable TV. Everybody was watching like YouTube or Netflix and in my family. And then I just like, we were going out, my wife and I, and my son was staying home. We were still in bed. And then I was just calling the cable company just for information. I said, hey, you know, just Mr. Cable Company, like, what if I want to, if I want to keep the internet, like I want a high-speed internet, fastest high speed, but I want to get rid of all the cable TV and stuff like that. Like, how much would I spend? And she said, $250. I said, this is what my new bill would be, $250. They said, no, this is how much you would save. You would save $250 a month. I said, what?
That very real money.
Cut that out right now. And then, and then my son woke up in the morning and just like, hey, the TV is not working. And then I told him, I thought it would be, you know, it would be a major crisis. But it said, oh, no, I said, I cut down the cable. So you're going to have to watch Netflix or YouTube. Oh, he said, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't care. I was spending $250 every month on cable TV. Nobody cared. So, yeah. So this is amazing. I mean, the only thing we cared about was a little bit of sport that we had to figure out, be a little bit creative. But so I think it's definitely a good exercise. I really agree with you to really look at your spending habits. You know, like I'm a big proponent also of the budget, like a 50, 30, 20 budget, where, you know, 50% is like essential, then 30% is things that are more discretionary, and then 20% spending. and kind of like, I call it like Marie Kondo. I don't know if you're familiar with Marie Kondo, but
Marie Kondo, smart choice.
Budget, right? So kind of like, if it doesn't bring you true happiness and stuff like that, just get rid of it. Like you can always, we're kind of in, a lot of these things are a subscription model. You can turn them off and on whenever you want them. So just turn them off. You know, it's no big deal. You turn them back on later on.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's the first step in that, is just going through and finding the things, like you said, you know, Marie Kondoing your budget. And then you can then take the next step, looking at your three largest expenses, which for most people, it's housing, transportation, and food. And for the average American household, it takes up 70% of their income.
Yeah.
So that's where the most meat is on the bone to carve away. And it doesn't have to be as painful as a lot of people think to cut down on those. So, I mean, the fastest way to supercharge your savings is to find a way to house hack, right? And score free housing.
Yeah.
And there are a ton of ways to do that. I mean, you know, my wife and I get free housing through her employer. But I mean, even before then, you know, I had a housemate when I was living in the States, and mm-hmm. and her rent covered three quarters of my mortgage payment every month.
The first house that we bought, we finished the basement and we rented it out to pay for the...
Yeah, have an ADU in the basement. I mean, yeah, you can do all that kind of stuff. There are so many ways to do it. I mean, my co-founder at Spark Rental, Denny, she and her husband hosted a foreign exchange student for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And this is when they were empty nesters. You know, their kids had all moved out of the house, but they still had this big suburban house. It was expensive. So, you know, they were trying to come up with ways to reduce that mortgage payment or their monthly housing costs. So they brought in, it was a Chinese housing exchange student or exchange student, and the stipend that they received from the agency covered almost all of their mortgage payment every month.
Wow.
And this kid became another member of their family, basically. I mean, they brought life back into this, you know, big empty suburban house, and they loved it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's so many creative ways to house hack. You just need to, again, get creative with it. We have a whole list of ideas on our website for house hacking. But you know, there are plenty of list idea out there on the internet. If you want to just spur some ideas, get some ideas for that. You know, again, it's a way to save a lot of money every month without taking a big reduction in quality of life. Mm-hmm. On the transportation side, you know, in the US, people just assume that every adult needs a car.
Yeah.
And they don't question that. You know, my wife and I, when we moved overseas, we were like, well, do we really each need a car in Abu Dhabi? And we were like, well, I don't know. You know, let's try living, you know, let's try sharing one car and just see how it goes. And it was totally fine. Yeah. It was absolutely fine. We lived in a relatively walkable area where, you know, I had a co-working space nearby. I could walk to that. We had grocery stores nearby. So, you know, my wife took the car to work every day to her school, which was about a half hour commute away. And then we shared it, you know, for personal stuff on nights and weekends, and it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved to Brasilia, we were like, well, what if we didn't have a car at all? You know, because we happened to be living within walking distance of her school. So we were like, well, you know, let's try it and see how it goes. And it was fine. It was great. So, you know, question that assumption that every adult needs a car. You might be okay with Uber or with ride sharing services, biking, walking. I mean, you know, I walk and bike everywhere in Peru. I take a scooter sometimes. I've got a little electric scooter that I bought used for $150 or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's always creative ways to cut down on these big structural expenses in your budget, from housing to transportation to food.
Yeah.
You know, cut out the work lunches, you know, just make a little extra at dinner and take leftovers into work the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And these are simple things that can save you a lot of money in the long term.
Yeah. For transportation, same thing. I mean, a lot of people are asking me, how come you don't have a Lamborghini? You know, take pictures in front of your Lamborghini. I said, I don't have a Lamborghini. I'm never going to get one. I'm not interested. They're not very practical.
It's like the least practical.
Where am I going to put my bike?
Yeah, and you know what? If you really want to drive a Lamborghini every once in a while,
rent
one for the day on Turo. Or yeah. You know, I mean, you can do that. And you can take the pictures of yourself in front of the Lambo for your social media. Yeah. You can go have your little joyride. But if you did own a Lamborghini, it would spend 6 months in the shop anyway. It's not like you'd be driving it all the time anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah, you hit one spot hole, you have to take it to the shop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But this is the same thing for us too. Like my wife and I, we used to have two cars, and it was needed at one point where there was a lot of transportations going on with the kids at soccer, kids at swim class, kids at school, kids this, kids that, a lot of kids thing. And then later on, the kids were out of the house, and then we just like, you know, we just realized that we didn't need one. We got rid of one of the cars, and we've been fine. And then if there was a need to, you know, like two people need the car at the same time, well, you know, we have Uber now, so we don't need. And now we're questioning whether we need the car we have. It's just like we could, if there was like a limo service or driver service that could be more regular, that someone that we know all the time and stuff like that. I think you can do that with Uber, maybe. You know, that'd be great. You know, just like take Uber everywhere and you don't have any problems.
And I mean, so my wife, she still has a commute even in Lima, but she just hires, she has a driver that she pays and shares that cost with several teachers who happen to live in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And the cost is pretty affordable every month. Yeah. So every morning, the driver picks her and this other couple up, takes them to work. Every afternoon, brings them home. And she doesn't have to hassle with the stressful traffic in Lima, which is awful, by the way. It's one of the worst in the world.
Can't be worse than LA.
It's worse than LA.
Really?
It's really bad. Yeah. I mean, it's up there with like Beijing. I mean, it's terrible. But, you know, you don't have to pay for those auxiliary expenses that come with car ownership, like insurance and maintenance and gas and all that stuff. So there was a report out. Well, actually, every year AAA puts out this report on the average cost of car ownership in the U.S. So last year's report, it was over $12,000 a year. Wow. And that, you know, again, it includes all of the expenses, the entirety of the expenses of owning a car, you know, not just the car payments, but maintenance and repairs and gas and parking and insurance and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a huge expense that most people don't fully appreciate just how much it costs to own a car.
Yeah. So let's go back here to our paths to live the lifestyle we want. So now I'm working full time, living paycheck to paycheck. Well, not anymore because I've done my budget and I'm realizing the table is this. I spent too much money on restaurant. I got rid of one of my cars. And then so now all of a sudden I have some money that I can play with. I'm able to save maybe 10, 20% of my income, and I can invest that. So how would you, what's your investment strategy? I know you focus a lot on passive income, and that's all you do right now. And I think it's all in real estate, I mean, you tell me. But yeah, so this is passive income. So how do you set up your passive income investment? What kind of investment and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so, I mean, I invest in stocks as well, of course. I have about a 50-50 portfolio. Actually, it's more than that. I have more stocks than that at this moment. But yeah, you can invest passively in stocks through a robo-advisor. It's in many cases free. Like I use Charles Schwab's robo-advisor. It's totally free. And every week, it just pulls a little bit of money out of my checking account to invest with. It rebalances automatically for me. It does tax loss harvesting automatically for me. I don't have to worry about any of it. So very simple, very easy on the stock side. On the real estate side, it takes a little bit more thought to invest passively in real estate, but not that much more thought. Mm-hmm. It's easier than ever before. So, you know, the classic way to invest passively in real estate is through REITs, real estate investment trusts. I don't actually love REITs, not because the average returns aren't any good. The average returns are fine. They're around the same as the S&P 500 for US REITs. So the returns are fine. The problem with publicly traded REITs is that they trade on public stock exchanges. So they have way too close a correlation with the stock market at large. And part of the whole point of investing in real estate, at least for me, is diversification, right?
Yeah.
And the only way you get any value out of diversification is if there's no correlation or very low correlation between the assets that you're investing in.
Yep.
So What does that leave you with as far as passive real estate investments, you know, as opposed to active direct real estate investments, you know, going out and flipping houses or buying rental properties, which takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of skill and knowledge, which frankly, most of us don't really want. You know, if you take the average person on the street and you ask them, do you have any interest in adding real estate to your portfolio? They'd say, oh yeah, sure. And then you ask them, do you want to become a landlord? And they say, no, I don't. Right. Like, so how do you invest in real estate passively without all the headaches, without all the knowledge and skill and labor required? You have a couple options. We already talked about REITs. That's one option on the table. I don't love them for that reason. We talked about too much correlation with stocks. You have real estate crowdfunding platforms, which some of them are great. Some of them are not, of course. But there are some great options out there that are open to non-accredited investors, you know, open to everybody, not just wealthy accredited investors. You know, I like Ground Floor a lot. They have paid very consistent average returns since inception, since they launched in 2013, in that 9.5% to 10% range every single year. Fundrise is pretty good. They had a bad 2023. But then again, so did a lot of people in real estate. Yep. You know, one nice thing about Fundrise, it's a $10 minimum investment. So everybody's got 10 bucks, right? You know, skip your Starbucks coffee for 2 days and you got 10 bucks. So I like Concrete a lot as a short-term and liquid platform that pays a lower return. Right now they're paying a 6.5% fixed interest return, but you've got full liquidity. You can pull your money out at any time with no penalty to your principal. They do ding your dividend a little bit if you pull out money in under a year. Let's see, ARC 7. They offer fractional property ownership in single family rentals at 20 bucks a pop. Arrived, similar thing, 100 bucks per share of fractional rental property investing. Nice thing about ARC 7 is they have a secondary market. You can sell shares at any time, at least after the initial holding period. So these are all options that are on the table for real estate crowdfunding. They're really easy. They're really simple. Anyone can do it. I've invested in all of those examples myself with my own personal money. I still have quite a bit of money invested in some of those. So that's sort of the entry level that, you know, you can take your 10 bucks or 20 bucks or 100 bucks or whatever, go try it out, see how it works with very little, you know, money risked, right?
Yeah. And you're dealing with professional managers, professional real estate investors typically that are managing the assets. So
exactly. So you don't have to do anything other than click a button to transfer the funds. Now, when you're ready to go to the next level up from there, but that's still pretty simple, start learning about real estate syndications. Now, a lot of people who have heard of real estate syndications will say, whoa, they're not that simple. They're not, you know, they're expensive to invest in. And to which I would reply, maybe it depends on how you're doing it. This is precisely why we created an investment club where we get together every month and we talk about different deals that are available in that moment. And we vet them together. And when we see one we like, we all go in on it together. So, you know, you don't need any skill to invest in that case because you're investing alongside other people. And, you know, you don't need to join an investment club like ours necessarily if you have friends and family who also have experience with this, who you can go in on those investments with. Mm-hmm. So if anyone's not familiar with the term real estate syndication or the term private equity real estate investment, these are just group investments. There's nothing to be intimidated by. You know, there's nothing scary about them. They're just group real estate investments where you're investing a relatively small amount of money in a big property, like an apartment complex or a mobile home park or a self-storage facility or, you know, an industrial property or whatever it is. So they're not scary. There's no reason to be intimidated by it. You know, you can learn everything you need to know in an afternoon for investing in these, especially if you're investing with other people who have experience with this and you get to benefit from their expertise as you're vetting this collectively, you know, as a group. So that is what we are doing in our investment club.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big downsides or barriers to entry with real estate syndication investing is the high minimum investment. It's typically in that $50,000 to $100,000 range, which is not chump change, right? I mean, that's very real money. That's similar to what you'd have to pay in a down payment and closing costs and cash reserves if you were to go out and buy a property by yourself. But again, this is why we are doing this as an investment club. So each person can come up with $5,000 instead of the 50 or 100 grand. Mm-hmm. And collectively, together, we can hit that $100,000 minimum investment. So each person comes up with $5,000, and together we surpass that $100,000 minimum.
Yeah.
And you know, we can spread out our risk over a lot of different properties. So at the end of the year, if you invest in 12 properties that way with, let's say, $60,000 instead of $60,000 in one single investment, you don't have to lay awake at night gnawing on your fingernails, worrying about how that one investment is performing. It just becomes an average of how all of those 12 deals are doing. And some of them will probably underperform, right? I mean, there's very real risk in every investment. Some of them are going to overperform, and most of them will just be in the middle of that bell curve. So again, it just becomes numbers at a page at that point, as opposed to all of your eggs in that one basket and you know, lying awake at night worrying about it.
Yeah. I mean, I like syndication. The one thing is that your money tends to be there, like kind of stuck for 3 to 5 years. So that's my only thing. I mean, but if you have like $5,000 stuck on your Spark Rental investing club, then yeah. I mean, having $5,000 stuck for 3 to 5 years is not a big deal. But yeah, if you do a syndication and you have to put $100,000 or $200,000 down, that's a lot of money.
No question. And you know, that so that ties back to people ask, they see the returns on syndications, you know, which are often in that 15 to 30% a year range.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, you know, with returns that high, these must be really, really high risk investments. To which I respond, no, not necessarily. I mean, some of them are high risk investments, no question, but not all of them are. A lot of times you have that asymmetry where it's a modest, a relatively modest risk and relatively high returns.
Yeah.
But there are other drawbacks or other challenges, inconveniences to investing in the syndication as opposed to investing in the stock market. And one of them is that lack of liquidity that you just talked about, right? So, you know, it's not necessarily that, you know, that investment paying 20% returns on a syndication is two or three times as risky as the stock market investment that you made. Mm-hmm. But there are some other drawbacks or, you know, inconveniences, again, to that syndication investment, like the lack of liquidity, like the long-term commitment, like the minimum investment. So, you know, that real estate syndication investment might be pretty low risk actually and pay great returns, but you have these other considerations, right? So it's not just about risk and return, or at least risk is not the only factor coming into play with these returns.
Yeah.
There are other components that you have to consider. And you know, a lot of people are okay with tying up their money for 3, 4, 5 years in a real estate syndication, knowing that they can't access it. It's a long-term investment. It's not liquid. They're okay with it, knowing that they're going to come out way ahead in the long run.
Mm-hmm. So have you done any like single family rentals? Because that's kind of what I don't like about even the multifamily. There's a couple of things that I don't like about that. The syndication, I didn't like that because I didn't have the control you know, my money being stuck there for a long time. So that's why I kind of pivoted to the single family rentals. The returns were better. I had control of the investment. There was it's not full liquidity, but you have some liquidity. I mean, I can sell one house without having to sell the whole apartment, a whole apartment building, you know? So I can sell one house and, you know, within a couple of months, then I have extra cash that that I needed, something like that. So have you considered something like that, like single family rentals or?
I used to own many. Yeah. I've owned around 20 single family rentals over the years. I consider myself a recovering landlord. I hated it. I hated being a landlord. I hated, you know, having tenants tell me, you know, checks in the mail when they didn't actually send the check. It wasn't actually in the mail.
Oh, so you were the property manager as well, or?
I mean, at times I managed them. At other times I hired out the property management. Yeah. But, you know, even when I hired out the property management, I still had to manage the manager who, in many cases, they were not professional. I mean, what I found is that property, it's not a very professional industry. There are some people, of course, in the property management industry that are professional, and they tend to work with the best assets, right? Mm-hmm. Because they get paid as a percentage of the rent. So if and those, the higher end the rental, the easier the work is for property managers. So they get paid more for less work. So why would good property managers work with bad properties? Mm-hmm. And those high maintenance tenants, they don't. So, you know, if you're investing in, you know, lower income rentals or even mid-range rentals, it's hard to find good property managers mm-hmm. to take on that labor for you.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, you have to be very selective about that, and you have to have a good partnership with them in order to do that. But definitely. Any particular market that you invest in?
No. So that is one of our core values in our investment club, is diversification, and we mean that in every possible sense, starting with what you just brought up, geographic diversification. So we aim to invest in as many different markets as we can. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, knowing that we're not going to be able to pick winners every time. And it's just about exposing ourselves to as many different markets as possible. You know, I like to say my crystal ball is no clearer than anyone else's, right? I don't know what will happen in Phoenix or Austin or Tampa over the next... but you know, I do know that if I spread my money among a lot of different markets, I'll come out okay in the end. The law of averages will protect me. And that's, we bring that same value of diversification across the board to other assets of this as well, or other components of this as well. So sponsors, which is the other word for syndicators, right? So we work with a lot of different syndicators. We want to spread our money among a lot of different syndicators, because, you know, it's hard to know before you've invested with somebody how well they're going to do with your money. I mean, you can look at their track record and you can, you know, you can ask other people, but the fact is, two of the biggest names in this industry that a lot of people recommended to us, over the last year, they've had the most struggle of all the sponsors we've worked with. And these are two very big name companies, had a great reputation in the space. Everybody was raving about them, and they have totally belly flopped in the last year. Yeah. So, you know, one policy that we aim for is not to invest with the same sponsor within 12 months of our first investment with them. We want to see how they do, how they handle unexpected hiccups, how they communicate, right? Mm. You know, all of that. So diversify across markets, you know, geographic diversification, diversify across sponsors, and also diversify across property types. Mm-hmm. So not just multifamily, not just mobile home parks, you know, everything. So we've invested in industrial properties, in mobile home parks, in apartment complexes. We've invested in retail, in self-storage. So again, the further and wider that we can spread our money, the more that the law of averages will protect us, you know, in the coming years.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. So, Brian, so if people want to reach out to you, they want to know more about Spark Rentals Co-Investing Club, if they want to know more about your book on lifestyle design, that's upcoming, I think.
Yeah, I need to start working on that.
So how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so obviously sparkrental.com, you can find out everything you want to know about our club there. We also have a ton of resources for direct, you know, active investors as well, from interactive maps and calculators, you know, depreciation calculators, cash flow calculators, you know, fire calculators, house hacking calculators, all that kind of fun stuff. We've got a ton of tools. We also have property management software for landlords. We have a ton of stuff for active investors, not just passive investors. And on the passive investing side, if you're interested in real estate crowdfunding platforms, we have a whole comparison tool for that as well. Okay. So, and then of course we have our investment club for syndications, you know, private equity, real estate investments. Beyond that, email me at brian@sparkrental.com. I'm available. Shoot me an email. And of course, we're on all the major social media platforms as well.
Excellent. Well, that's very good. Well, Brian, thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your unique perspective on the lifestyle design and how to start with the end in mind. And then your co-investing club is pretty unique. I haven't heard anything like this. out there.
There's so there's no one doing what we're doing. It's totally unique. So that's why we love it.
And especially across different real estate segments and all that kind of stuff. So I think I wish you a lot of good luck this year. And I'll talk to you later.
Eric, thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Break Away from the Rat Race with your host, Eric Martel. If you want to share your story and experience with our listeners, please message us on Facebook at Break Away from the Rat Race. Also, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and our podcast on iTunes.